the commonest complaints about Catholicism is that it's the religion of no, especially in the area of sexuality. It appears as though when the rest of the culture is moving in a much more progressive direction in that regard, the church seems to be kind of a crabbed, old-fashioned, puritanical, finger-wagging no religion. Well, I first want to make a distinction between two types of no. There's no pure and simple, by which I mean a no to something positive. Think of someone who's jealous, and someone's success appears to them, and they say no to it. They simply try to undermine it. Or think of a racist who sees the object of his irrational hatred, and he says no to him and tries to undermine him. Well, those are just negations, pure and simple. But there's another kind of no, which you might say is a no to a no. Something negative is going on, and you say no to it. In fact, you're in service of a higher yes. Think of it as a no to a no, which is sort of a double negative. It constitutes actually a great yes. You know, an example of this, any golf coach worth his salt will say no far more often than he says yes. That's because there are 1,000 ways to swing the golf club improperly. So you say no to all of those, but it's in service of the great yes, which is the right way to swing the golf club. Well, can I suggest that the church's no in regard to sexuality is a no of the second type? It's not a puritanism. It's not a negation of the body or pleasure or sexuality. It's a no to a no. It's a no to a distortion of what sexuality ought to be. Now, what is the great yes? I mean, what is the church's view of what sex ought to be? Well, can I suggest looking at a perhaps surprising place, namely Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 12. And we find this line, which is fascinating. Paul says, "I urge you, therefore, by the mercies of God, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God, your spiritual worship." Now, here's Paul talking to a first century audience that was well aware of this practice of sacrifice. What would an ancient Israelite do? Well, he'd bring to the temple in Jerusalem an unblemished animal, lamb or a sheep or a bull or something, and he would sacrifice the animal to Yahweh as a sign of forgiveness, of reparation, or of communion, or of thanksgiving. What was he doing? He was aligning himself thereby to God. He was bringing his mind, his will, his whole person onto line with Yahweh. No ancient Israelite ever thought for a second that God needed these sacrifices. Think of some of the pagan gods and goddesses who seem to need our worship. That's not true in the Bible. But the ancient Israelite knew he needed sacrifice, because in the very act of sacrifice, he was becoming conformed unto God. Okay, so Paul says, "I urge you to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. To construe your whole life as an offering by which you become conformed to God." That's what he means. Now, take one more step. Who is this God that Paul is urging the Romans here to sacrifice to? It's the God who's disclosed in Jesus Christ as love. Look in 1 John, and we find that famous line, "God is love. Therefore, when we live in God, we live in love." Right? Now, put the logic together. To sacrifice the whole of yourself to God is to become conformed to God. But God is love. Therefore, to sacrifice the whole of your life, and that means mind, will, passions, emotions, body, sexuality, that means everything in you is being transformed into love. Okay, what's the church's teaching on sexuality? That your sexuality is meant to become love. It's meant to become a vehicle of love. It's meant to be conformed unto love. And when it slides off of that conformity, that's when the church says no. When it becomes what it's not supposed to be, then the church says no to that no. It's in service of the great yes. Now, let me make it just a little more specific. So does the church, for example, say no to rape and to sexual abuse and to manipulation? Well, sure, those are obvious betrayals of love. So, of course, the church says no to those. But does it also say no to sex outside of that total mutual commitment in love that we call marriage? Yeah, because sex is meant to be a vehicle of love within that context. Push it further. The church also say no to a conscious and deliberate blocking of the procreative function of sex. Yeah, because that's meant to be another way of expressing love. It says no to egregious violations of love, sure, rape and sexual abuse and so on, but it also says no to these more subtle betrayals of love. Now, I know a lot of people would balk today and they'd say, well, look, yeah, I mean, sure, we should condemn rape and sexual abuse, but when it comes to other expressions, shouldn't we allow people much more personal flexibility? Well, forgive me again for these golf examples, but they can't help me. Someone's working with a good golf teacher. He will correct his egregious faults. Here's like the really basic things you're doing wrong. But anyone who really wants to have an excellent swing wants that coach to press it further. Press beyond just the egregious problems and say, well, no, here's some more subtle, some finer points that you need work on. He'll want him to keep saying no to these inadequate expressions of the golf swing. Furthermore, he'd want his teacher, it seems to me, to hold up to him the highest ideals. You know, don't just hold up some junior player. Don't hold up some decent weekend golfer. No, no, hold up to me Fred Couples and Jack Nicklaus and Rory McIlroy. Hold up the best golfers you can think of. I want them to be the high ideals. See, the point is, we would never tolerate such leniency and mediocrity when it comes to areas of life that we take seriously. You know, oh, just correct, you know, the major problems and then do whatever you want. Would you accept that if you were trying to learn a musical instrument? Would you accept it if you're trying to swing the golf club? Would you accept it in any area of life that you take seriously that, well, just the serious stuff, you know, get rid of that, but then the rest, just do what you want? No, no, no. When people are serious about something, they want that very refined, that steady correction, so that they might come to excellence. So the church is trying to bring us into conformity with the love that God is, at all levels, including the level of sexuality. And that's why the church corrects us and cajoles us and encourages us and holds up to us very high ideals. Should the church dial down its ideals because we often fail? Well, no. Of course we often fail, just as we often fail to hit the golf ball properly. It doesn't mean you dial down the high ideals. The church holds those up to us continually. See, the bottom line is the church's many no's are so strong because its yes to what sex ought to be is so ringing.